नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So continuing our reading of the first chapter of the eighth canto entitled The Manus, Administrators of the Universe, and we'll be doing texts 30 through 32 today. I'll read 30 and 31 myself because there's no purport, and then together we'll go over 32. Text 30. Also in this Manvantara, the Supreme Lord Vishnu took birth from the womb of Hrini, the wife of Harimeda, and he was known as Hari. Hari saved his devotee Gajendra, the king of the elephants, from the mouth of a crocodile. Text 31. King Parikshit said, My lord, Bhadarayani, we wish to hear from you in detail how the king of the elephants, when attacked by a crocodile, was delivered by Hari. Text 32. Tatkatasu mahatpunyang danyang swastyayanang subam yatra yatro tamashloko bhagavan giyate harihi tatkatasu Tasu mahatpunyang danyang swastyayanang shubham yatra yatro tamashloko bhagavan giyate harihi tatkatasu mahatpunyang danyang swastyayanang shubham yatra yatro tamashloko bhagavan giyate harihi Ladies, please. Tatkatasu. In those narrations, Mahat, great, punyam, pious, danyam, glorious, swastyayanam, auspicious, shubham, all good, yatra, whenever, yatra, wherever, uttamashlokaha, the Lord who is known as Uttamashloka. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Giyate is glorified. Harihi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Any literature or narration in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Uttama Shloka, is described and glorified is certainly great, pure, glorious, auspicious, and all good. Purport. The Krishna consciousness movement is spreading all over the world simply by describing Krishna. We have published many books, including Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita in 17 volumes, 400 pages each, as well as Bhagavad Gita and the Nectar of Devotion. We are also publishing Srimad Bhagavatam in 60 volumes. Wherever a speaker holds discourses from these books and an audience hears him, this will create a good and auspicious situation. Therefore, the preaching of Krishna consciousness must be done very carefully by the members of the Krishna consciousness movement, especially the sannyasis. This will create an auspicious atmosphere. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Charne Nirishesha Srinivadi Paschati Adesha Charne. So in this particular section of the Bhagavatam, we're hearing about the Manus, and specifically about, in the previous few verses, we've been hearing about the distinction between the Devas and the Asuras, and how the Devas are explicitly tasked with the duty of preserving the authority and the integrity of the Vedas. Whereas the Asuras, they neglect the authority and integrity of the Vedas. And this is a very important task, because when the authority of the Vedas becomes neglected, as mentioned in the previous verses, then the stability and the peaceful nature of the universe will be corrupted. People won't be able to live peaceful, happy lives. Which is really important, actually. It's actually a very fundamental aspect of Krishna consciousness, living a peaceful life. Unless we can actually live a peaceful life, it's not, well, not that it's not possible, but it's extremely difficult to execute spiritual life if you aren't peaceful and happy. Which is why it's mentioned that one has to come at minimum to the mode of goodness before you can use it as a springboard to the transcendental. Because when we're engrossed in the lower modes of passion and ignorance, we're too disturbed by the mode's material nature to be able to focus on anything else. Which ties in with this next section that we'll be getting into concerning Gajendra, the king of the elephants. Gajendra was attacked by a crocodile, and he was so disturbed he couldn't concentrate on anything else. I forget exactly how long, but it was an extraordinary amount of time that he was fighting this crocodile. And he was having such a difficult time because he was out of his element. He wasn't on the land, he was in the water. He was misplaced. And because he was misplaced, he couldn't get any strength. He couldn't get any peace of mind. So there's so many different lessons that we can learn from this. Most important of which, though, is in terms of Krishna consciousness and our practical application. An important point that Prabhupada's mentioning here in this purport, which in the context of the verses surrounding these particular verses may seem like it doesn't really fit, because in the purport he's just talking about his books. But at the same time, this is also extremely important to understand, because these books are what carry the authority of the Vedas, specifically in this age of Kali. Previous, before this age of Kali, it wasn't necessary to have anything written. People's intelligence, their lifespan, their capacity for understanding was all tremendously enhanced. Well, I shouldn't say enhanced, I should say normal. And so there was no need for writing. Simply a spiritual master would say something once to his disciple, and the disciple would immediately memorize it, remember it. And there wouldn't be any failings of memory, any corruption of integrity of what it was that he had learned. And that's due to the pious nature of the previous yugas. But in this Kali Yuga, everything collapses. People's lifespan collapses, their intelligence collapses, their memory collapses, their piety collapses. Everything gets degraded and corrupted. Which is partly why there's no written records of anything past about 5,000 years ago. Because before that, it wasn't the Kali Yuga. And there was no need of written records. So with the advent of Kali Yuga, Srila Vyasadeva was tasked with the great endeavor of documenting all the teachings. That's why he's called the compiler of the Vedas. It's not that he created the Vedas. He compiled them. In other words, he put them into written word. He was entrusted with this great task because in the age of Kali, we don't have the memory or the capacity of understanding to be able to hear something once and perfectly comprehend it. Rather, as with my experience and probably many of you also, we read something once and then we probably forget about it. And so it takes repeated study. We have to go over it over and over and over again. Read it and reread it and reread it. I can't count the number of times that I've read the Bhagavad Gita, but every time I read it, I come up with newer and newer realizations. Thinking to myself, is this even the same book that I read last time? But that's just an indicator of my lack of intelligence and my lack of memory. Because there's so much to be had in these different books. There's so much knowledge contained within them, yet our capacity for picking up on that spiritual realization is so minuscule. That's why these books are so important, and that's why Prabhupada mentions it in this context, in the context of what the previous few verses were talking about, preserving the Vedic authority. And it's especially important in this age of Kali because everything just gets destroyed in this age of Kali. In the first canto, in the 18th chapter of the first canto, texts 35 through 37, it's mentioned actually how this age of Kali began. It all began with Maharaj Parikshit touring his kingdom. And when he was going through a particular jungle, by the influence of Yogamaya, he became inordinately thirsty and disturbed by this thirst. Because Maharaj Parikshit, he's actually a Rajarshi, Rajarishi, a saintly king. In other words, he's already conquered his senses. So for him to be disturbed mentally by his thirst, it's a preposterous idea. Rather, it was an arrangement made by Yogamaya in order for certain circumstances to happen. So when he was being disturbed by this, by his thirst, he happened across a hermitage, place where a very renowned Brahmin was residing. But this Brahmin happened to be in Samadhi. And so he wasn't externally conscious of what was going on. So when Maharaj Parikshit went into this Brahmin's home, and the Brahmin wasn't responding because of being disturbed by his thirst, Maharaj Parikshit felt very offended, and he put a dead snake around the Brahmin's neck. But the son of this Brahmin, who was very inexperienced, he had a little Brahma Tejas. In other words, he had some brahminical power. And not understanding what was going on, and being a hot-headed little kid, he wanted to show off in front of his friends. And so in front of his friends, he boasted about his power. And so he said this to his friends in text 35. He said, after the departure of Lord Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead and Supreme Ruler of everyone, these upstarts have flourished, our protector being gone. Therefore, I myself shall take up this matter and punish them. Just witness my power. In other words, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, that this little punk, being puffed up with his false sense of power, his Brahma Tejas, in his arrogance, he declares to his little immature kid friends, I'm going to take the position of Lord Krishna because I have all this vast power at my disposal. I'm the one who can properly punish and discharge this duty and function. So I will become like the Personality of Godhead. And it's explained that that this was actually how the Personality of Kali got a footing in this world, because before, by the expert management and rulership of Maharaj Parikshit, even though Krishna himself had allotted certain places for Kali to reside, Maharaj Parikshit didn't allow any opening. And so the Personality of Kali was just wandering around with no residence, no place to reside. But he was always vigilant, watching out for an opening. And so finally he found this weakness in this son of the Brahmin, and he exploited it. And so Prabhupada says in the purport, these are the principal signs of upstarts who want to take the place of Sri Krishna under the influence of the age of Kali. An upstart with a little power wants to become an incarnation of the Lord. There are many false incarnations after the departure of Lord Krishna from the face of the globe, and they are misleading the innocent public by accepting the spiritual obedience of the general mass of people to maintain false prestige. In other words, the Personality of Kali got the opportunity to reign through this son of a Brahmin, Sringi. So this is explicitly what's being talked about in these verses surrounding today's verse in the Bhagavatam, is preserving the authority of the Vedas. And this is what happens in the age of Kali. The authority of the Vedas is degraded. To a certain extent, it's actually lost. And that's why it's so important that it be preserved through this process of Krishna consciousness. Because there are so many, you know, false incarnations that are simply misleading the public. They've either invented their own teachings, so-called teachings, or they pervert actual teachings for their own ends. And then the mass of people get misled and bewildered by all these false speculations. And it's actually a huge problem. Most people nowadays don't have really any clue, any idea as to what it means to live. You know, what the purpose of life is, what the goal and function of it is. Rather, everyone gets so caught up in this material energy that they lose sight of what the real goal is. You know, like for instance, nowadays so many people are bewildered by the cult of science. They believe science to be a religion in and of itself. And that science poses many different postulates and hypotheses and theories. And they talk about all these different things that they can't actually prove, that they can't actually show. And so they demand people's belief. Oh, well, you know, you just need to believe in this because this is what makes our theory work. And you have to believe in it because just see all these results we're producing. We've invented so much technology. We've advanced human civilization. We've decreased the suffering of the human condition. This is proof that our methods work. But in reality, it all boils down to just another religion, because the very fundamental basis of their whole theology is the same as what they decry against the so-called religions they want to banish. Saying, oh, you know, you're just a bunch of, you know, believers who just do as they're told and you don't critically analyze the real world. You're too weak to live on your own two feet, so you have to morally justify your actions by some higher authority. But yet all these accusations and criticisms that the cult of science is posting, they themselves are actually guilty of also. That's why Prabhupada presents Krishna consciousness not as a religion in the sense of what modern people connote religion to be. You know, merely some belief system, some mythology based upon blind belief, blind faith, blindly following other blind people with no fundamental verification or veracity. But in reality, Krishna consciousness is a spiritual science. You know, science itself, just in the pure concept of it, is simply a tool. Science is simply a method of observation of things that happen. But the problem lies in trying to use that to explain through mental speculation the ultimate foundation of reality. That's when it turns into a cult. And then when you excommunicate people from academic circles or from society based upon defying what your cult defines as being acceptable, then in the true sense, it's just another cultish religion that has, you know, no real authority. Which is why it's so important that the Vedic authority be maintained. Not only established, but maintained. And that's why Prabhupada spent so many hours painstakingly establishing what the Vedic authority is. Establishing this Vedic science. Because not only has this process of Krishna consciousness been thoroughly described, it's been documented, the effects of it have been documented. That's why he specifically mentions the nectar devotion in the purport of today's purport. Because the nectar devotion is actually the science of Krishna consciousness. It documents the process of how to actually execute Krishna consciousness. The other main important books, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, the Nectar of Instruction, they also document these things, but the Nectar of Devotion specifically gets into the actual mechanics. The pravritis and the nivritis, the things that we do, the things that we don't do, the things that are important, why they're important. It actually gets into the nitty-gritty of all the laws. In some places, Prabhupada refers to the nectar devotion as the law books of spiritual living, you know, of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is spiritual living. And it's very important to understand these. And then the other works are important to understand, to see how these laws, how these rules and regulations are actually applied. Just like, for instance, in the legal system, there's the actual judicial laws themselves, and then there's precedent. Precedent is how the laws have been applied over the course of time throughout history. And so when a lawyer is arguing before a judge or a jury, the lawyer actually argues based upon both things, both upon the laws themselves and upon precedent, how the laws have been applied in the past. So in the same way, to fully understand how Krishna consciousness is to be applied within our life, it's important not only to understand the laws themselves, namely the teachings and the nectar devotion, but also to understand how those laws are applied by studying the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the lives and examples of other great saints and sadhus, our own spiritual master. And in that way, we can actually understand this process of Krishna consciousness. So I think I'll open it up there for any comments or questions. I have other material, but I think this is sufficient for the point. Yes?
Thank you, Omkar Prabhu. I had a question about earlier in your class. I just wanted some clarification because it seemed like you were equating memory with realization, and I just needed some clarification on that.
Oh, no, I wasn't equating memory with realization at all. Those are actually two separate things. Even in the Vedas, it's mentioned there are two separate words entirely. One is jnana. Jnana means knowledge. Knowledge is related with memory, even though knowledge and memory are technically two separate things also. Knowledge is what you remember. Memory is the ability to recount knowledge. But then there's also vigyan. Vigyan is realization. It's also called wisdom. It's also called applied knowledge. In other words, there's one thing, which is knowledge, which is being able to recite different things you've memorized, things that you've learned in books theoretically, things that you may be able to mentally spin around on wheels and mentally comprehend. But at the same time, you haven't really realized what it actually means within your heart. So what's required isn't simply knowledge. But of course, wisdom is based upon knowledge. So once we have knowledge, then we can see practically how that knowledge is applied in our surroundings and our everyday living experience. For instance, most people in the world are completely bewildered by how this material world works. They think it's either random or semi-random. And why is one thing happening to one person and another thing happening to another person? How come I got the short end of the stick, and how come that person has everything? I don't understand it. This world isn't fair. Therefore, there can't be a God because I'm suffering and somebody's happier than me. That's the conclusion so many materialists come upon. But this is simply their own ignorance, their own lack of understanding. So when they come to understand how the three modes of material nature works and the nature of karma, then with open eyes, with eyes illuminated with knowledge, they can see how these three modes of material nature are operating within their living experience. And they can practically see how karma is actually playing out. And then once they see through experience, it becomes applied knowledge. They've had the knowledge, and now they've applied it within their life, and now they can factually understand how it is that these things are actually happening. It's no longer theoretical. It's something that they've experienced. And it's through this experience that it turns into vigyan, or rather it turns into wisdom. Yes, Mother Karuna?
And the experience, yes, I completely agree with you, but that has to be coupled with purification. It has to, you know, the chanting, and in other words, the process of realization isn't going to take place unless, so we can't read, we can't study, we can't learn anything from the scripture unless it's actually the process of purification is taking place. And Krishna won't let the scripture appear to us on the page. We won't see it. That's why every time we read it, we see something different, because our purification is evolving throughout our spiritual life. I hope I'm not making this too intellectual.
Yeah, and actually, if you are engaging in the process of spiritual purification, you can actually learn from everything around you. You know, like for instance, that Brahmin who had so many different spiritual masters. You know, like the bee was one spiritual master, the prostitute was another spiritual master. So by just, you can come to spiritual realization also if you have purified heart and mind simply by observing the environment around you. You can pick up lessons from everyone, from everywhere. So the process of purification can't be stressed enough. It's very important. Prim?
Today there are so many different spiritual groups on the planet, and some of them, you say some of them, Prabhupada said, probably there are cheaters, but some of them could be also bona fide followers of impersonal philosophy, jnanis, yogis. So how you can distinguish between them?
Well, it's mentioned in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, actually, that system which develops pure love for God within the heart, that's, you know, first class. So that's really the standard. You know, we're not a sectarian movement. In other words, we don't divide people into sects, into different brands and flavors. Well, you know, I'm this flavor and you're that flavor. I'm red, you're blue. You know, we don't make distinctions based upon that. So in the same way, we don't distinguish, oh, well, you know, you're a Christian, you're a Hindu, you're Muslim, you're this, you're that. Those are simply upadis. Those are simply material designations. You know, Krishna, he couldn't care less what brand you call yourself. He couldn't care less whether you're a Christian, Hindu, Muslim, or whatever the heck you want to call yourself. What is it that Krishna really cares about? Krishna cares about the state of our heart. Krishna cares about the degree of love that's awakened within our heart for him. And so that's how it's actually to be judged. You know, the tree is judged based upon the fruit that it produces. Does the tree produce good fruit or does it produce bad fruit? Does your so-called system of religion produce pure love of God within your heart? Or does it produce demonic living entities? Things should be judged as they are, rather than being judged based upon our mental speculation.
Acharya?
Hare Krishna, Omkar Prabhu. Thank you for your wonderful class. You mentioned how Maharaj Parikshit, before he was coerced by Sringi, you mentioned that Lord Krishna, even that Lord Krishna allowed Kali, and gave to Kali some places to stay. So I wonder, it was Lord Krishna or Maharaj Parikshit himself the one who who...
Yeah, after I mentioned that, I actually remembered myself that it was actually Maharaj Parikshit. Because when Kali was previously attacking the cow, Parikshit Maharaj was actually going to kill him. But, you know, Kali begged for his life. And so Parikshit allowed him to live, but banished him from his kingdom. And said, you can't enter my kingdom. And so there's this whole negotiation process. Because Maharaj Parikshit's kingdom was basically the entire world. And so Kali was saying, well, what, if I'm not allowed in your kingdom, I don't have any place to go. You have to give me some place to be if you're going to let me live. And so that's when Maharaj Parikshit allowed him those different places, you know, places where there's prostitution, drinking, gambling, hoarding of gold, and slaughtering of animals. Five different places. In other words, the places that break the four principles of spiritual life, and also places where they hoard gold or hoard wealth. But during Maharaj Parikshit's reign, he didn't allow any of those places to exist, so Kali didn't have any residence. I'll take Brigu's question and then we'll end there. Yeah, it was a whole negotiation process, you're right. But even then, there weren't many places where gold was actually hoarded during Maharaj Parikshit's reign. And so this was actually the first entrance that Kali had to establish his rulership over this age, was through this immature little kind of, I suppose you could say, punk of a Brahmin, who was just puffed up. And so that was his foot in the door, Kali's foot in the door. And once he corrupted this young Brahmin boy, then gradually over time, all the Brahmins lost their tejas, lost their potency. Where before, the potency of Brahmins was immeasurable. It was just inconceivable. Like there's one story in the Bhagavatam about these Brahmins engaging in a sacrifice. And there were some demons that were wanting to thwart their sacrifice. And so they were coming to attack these so-called helpless, defenseless Brahmins. So the Brahmins simply offered one mantra and some oblations in the sacrificial fire. And simply from that one incantation, you know, all these soldiers just mystically appeared out of nowhere and defeated the demons. And then they just peacefully continued on with their yajna. I mean, Brahmins were just immeasurably powerful. That's the power of this Brahma Tejas, and also the power of transcendental sound vibration. You know, transcendental sound is actually how the universe was even created. Lord Brahma himself, he first created this material world, manifested all the planets and everything. He's the secondary creator, and he manifested it all simply through the power of sound. It's incredible. Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.